You're listening to Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's Echo Park Lake, a bright morning, not hot just yet. Folks are jogging along a path that circles the water. And on the grassy areas at the north end of this park, you can see dozens of tents. Some of those tents with belongings piled outside. Now, this kind of scene is so common in Los Angeles. Housed people comfortably going about their routines. They're running, pushing strollers, talking on the phone. Right next to unhoused people who have no reliable access to running water or food. That juxtaposition took on a nightmarish quality one recent afternoon right here in Echo Park.
So when we call 911, when they come to get his body, they take him out of the tent, you know, and they put the sheet over him, and then they wait for hours. They didn't block off anything. Families are, like, taking picture next to his tent, and, like, kids are running around and everything because they don't realize what's happening here.
That's Katria Kirby, who goes by the nickname Bliss. Bliss, who lives at the park, is talking about a friend who died in his tent in the middle of the day last month. His name was Andrew Kettle. He was 51 years old.
It shattered me. It really shattered me. Really just, no one deserves that.
Homelessness in Los Angeles County isn't just on the rise. It's also becoming more deadly. So far this year, more than 600 people have died unhoused. Andrew Kettle was number 566. His story shows the vast difference between what it's like to die unhoused versus housed. KCRW's Anna Scott picks up the story from here.
One person who knew Andrew really well is Jim Drusbacki. They grew up together in New Jersey. When Jim heard the news about Andrew's death,
It felt like a piece of me had gone with him, you know? Yeah, I don't have that many friends, you know, and not many friends that I've known that long.
Jim says Andrew was outgoing, goofy, a guitar player, and a deadhead who loved animals. One blurry photo of Andrew that's been going around online shows a guy with longish, sandy brown hair under a backwards baseball cap playing an acoustic guitar.
He was always there for me, and he was always there for anybody that needed help. And he was just a devil-may-care guy with a good heart that ended up in a bad place.
Jim says Andrew struggled with his mental health going back decades. At one point, he was diagnosed as bipolar, but never got proper treatment.
You know, he would medicate with alcohol.
Over the years, Andrew worked as a landscaper, a roadie, a dog groomer. He moved around, going to Florida at one point. He did some jail time for drug and alcohol-related offenses.
He always loved L.A. He never stopped talking about, you know, the Laurel Canyon and Beverly Hills and the old Hollywood.
Andrew came here earlier this year to live with some friends. That situation didn't last, but Jim says when he last spoke to Andrew a few months ago, Andrew was still housed.
He was like a caretaker for an elderly guy. He was living in his apartment, and he had always called me like several times a week, and then he stopped calling altogether.
Jim's not sure exactly how Andrew fell into homelessness. Whatever the circumstances, the move put Andrew's life at risk. Paul Simon is chief medical officer for the county's public health department.
All other things being equal, being homeless is a risk factor for dying.
The stress of living outdoors and poor healthcare access are two of the reasons that homelessness creates health risks and exacerbates ones that are already there, like addiction, which Andrew suffered from. According to Simon, unhoused people in LA are 26 times more likely to die of a drug or alcohol overdose than the general population, not just because of higher levels of addiction, but because being homeless makes addiction more deadly. County research has also shown that if you're homeless, you're about 2.5 times more likely to die of heart disease than the general population, 10 times more likely to die by homicide, 11 times more likely to be killed by a vehicle.
If you actually account for the increase in the homeless numbers, the actual rate of mortality in that population is going up, which suggests that being homeless is becoming increasingly hazardous to your health.
Now add in a pandemic. Some places that unhoused people rely on for meals, water, and other services aren't accessible.
Cafes are closed and libraries are closed. I think that's where I met Andrew, actually, was at our cell phone charging table at Echo Park Lake.
Jed Perriott is an organizer with the grassroots advocacy group Streetwatch LA.
I just thought Andrew Kettle was such a positive, warm, funny person that I was excited to get to know more. And suddenly he was gone.
He was always telling stories. That was what we did. We loved to sit and tell stories to each other. I'm full of stories and he's full of stories. And I mainly listen to his stories. He out-talks me.
That's Bliss, Andrew's friend at Echo Park Lake. Bliss says Andrew was in his addiction at the time of his death, that he'd used meth the night before, but was clear-headed on June 16th around noon. Bliss and Andrew were having one of their conversations.
In the midst of us talking, he says, "I feel like I'm having a heart attack. I'm going to call 911 then." And he says, "Go ahead." Like, he was getting more pale, and then his body just started sweating to where it was soaked. It was soaked. And so when the paramedics got there, he was shaking and he could barely get up. They walked him to like the where the bushes and vines and everything sits just so he can sit down and they can examine him.
Bliss says paramedics had trouble taking Andrew's blood pressure because of his shaking and told him to calm down, but did not offer him a ride to the hospital.
They did not. They didn't really ask him anything except for, you know, what's wrong, what's going on. They asked him if he did drugs and he said no. And I just kind of kept quiet.
A spokesman for the city's fire department said they're doing an internal investigation to see if paramedics followed proper procedure. The department couldn't provide any other details because of privacy restrictions around medical information. Bliss says Andrew did tell the paramedics about his heavy drinking.
And he said the last time he had drank was the night before. So he basically told them that, yeah, he's an alcoholic. And they said, well, he's detoxing from alcohol. Just need to lay down, sleep it off. And then he told me, yeah, you know, your friend just needs to sleep it off. After they left, you know, they told him, yeah, go back to the tent. So he went back to his tent.
Bliss doesn't know if Andrew consumed any alcohol or substances after that. At that point, Bliss left the park for about an hour to get food.
I figured I'd share Burger King with him because if it's alcohol, he's going to need some food.
When Bliss came back and looked into Andrew's tent,
he was already stiff and everything. And he had his hands kind of tightened and up on his chest, but his eyes were open. That's when I knew, like, okay. And I just jumped out and asked for help.
The county medical examiner coroner's office hasn't ruled yet on the cause of death. One of the people Bliss called right away was Jed Perriott with Streetwatch LA.
And when I showed up, the first thing I saw was six police officers. And they were standing around next to a white sheet that was covered over Andrew's body, right there in broad daylight at the park on a beautiful day. People walking by as if it was nothing.
More than a decade ago, the Los Angeles Coalition to End Hunger and Homelessness put out a report on mortality among the unhoused. It was called Dying Without Dignity. One of its authors told me recently that homeless people disproportionately die alone, but also in public, on sidewalks, in parks, on city streets. He said, quote, "They're invisible while they're alive, and they're invisible when they die." On June 16th, Andrew Kettle was one of three people who died homeless in LA County that day. That's the daily average, three a day. In the 6 weeks since then, nearly 50 more people have died unhoused.
KCRW's Anna Scott reporting. Anna covers housing and homelessness for us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Coronavirus cases and the number of people hospitalized for COVID in LA County have been ticking back up since things opened back up in May and June. According to the Public Health Department, LA County hospitals are treating more than 2,000 people who have the virus, and between a quarter and a third of those folks are in ICU beds. Well, now a couple of LA County's biggest public hospitals are getting a major assist in their work. The U.S. military is deploying dozens of Air Force medics to both LA County USC and Harbor UCLA. About 40 people are being divided to work between the two. Dr. Brad Spellberg is the chief medical officer over at LA County USC Medical Center, and he's with us right now. Doctor, welcome.
Thank you very much.
This is a new thing. How many Air Force medics are we talking about here? How many are you getting over at County?
So it's a combined 40 staff between the two hospitals, a mixture of physicians, nurses, respiratory therapists, et cetera.
Will they be focused on COVID patients or just helping out more generally to sort of ease the, you know, ease the concern there?
Well, I think it's going to be a mixture. We're still sorting out the best way to deploy the staff. And, you know, I think the good news is that actually in the last week, cases have been easing after multiple, many, many continuous weeks of steady rise. And so we are off our peak at this point, thankfully.
We're off our peak. And you spoke with KCRW's Press Play a couple of weeks ago. At that time, you said your staff was stretched, obviously, but you had the resources you needed. Did you look at the numbers that were steadily rising and say, uh-oh?
Yeah, so the system put a request in several weeks ago that we're realizing that this is done at the system level, not at the local hospital level. And, you know, at that point, cases were continuously rising. And exactly as you say, uh-oh, we could use some help. For the last, I would say, 5 to 7 days, for reasons I don't understand, cases, new positives coming to the hospital have slowed. I hope the trend continues. That doesn't mean we're not full. We still have lots of COVID, but we are off our peak.
Off your peak. I mean, when you look at the numbers, does that give you sort of a sigh of relief, or is it a, man, we really got to get this under control?
Well, those are mutually compatible sentiments. We did have a number, probably 6 to 8 continuous weeks of fairly dramatic rise week over week. Last week, the Department of Public Health numbers for the 7-day period ending on Sunday was down from the prior week for the first time in recent memory. Now, that's still way higher than we were 2 months ago. But I think part of flattening the curve is buying the health system time to adapt to realities on the ground. And we've done a number of innovative care changes to allow us to be much more efficient at having patients flow through our health system. There is a point at which no amount of efficiency allows you to keep pace. And we were not far from that point a couple of weeks ago, I would say 10 to 14 days ago. So we are breathing a little bit of a sigh of relief that over the last 5 to 7 days, things have slowed down for us. That doesn't mean we're out of the woods. We have no idea if that trend will continue or if things will tick back up. So those are not mutually exclusive sentiments.
The Air Force medics that are coming in, does that give you, I mean, obviously, sigh of relief. Do you feel like you'll now have the capacity that you need? Or are you guys still feeling stretched thin?
Well, I think that we were getting very concerned a couple of weeks ago. And I don't want to give you the impression we are not concerned now. We are concerned. I think the concern here is sustainability. I should make very clear, we do have capacity. We have never had to exceed our existing ICU capacity, although 2 weeks ago we came very close to the limit of it. But we are open for business, and we have lots of non-COVID patients coming to us, and they should come to us. We are not out of space for patients, and people who need medical care should be coming to us. The concern is sustainability. We don't know how long this is going to last. We don't know if it's going to tick back up. And so given the uncertainty, yes, of course, one is very appreciative of the DoD's help to relieve some stress from our staff.
Is it a manpower issue? You say, you know, you have the space. I mean, is it about how many people are working with not only COVID patients, but anybody who comes in? Or is it a space issue? We could run out of beds.
So this is a really important point. People have drawn, I think, not quite understanding how hospitals work, an artificial distinction between beds and staff. I mean, if worse came to worse, you go into a parking lot and turn it into an emergency disaster hospital. You could put gurneys in there as beds. The issue is, and we have empty space in our hospital that we could put actual ICU beds in. Who's going to staff them? If you look at what happened in New York, when they went into surge, to a degree, we have not even come close to an LA County. You were having highly unqualified physicians taking care of critically ill patients on the vent because there was no one else to do it, right? So the issue is you run out of qualified staff, and then you begin using staff who are not trained for this kind of patient care. And you do that as long as you can and as much as you can. And what we don't want to be is in that situation.
You're talking about patient care, doctor, and I wonder, I don't know if you've seen this New York Times report recently that the patients at private hospitals in New York received better care, much better care, and had better outcomes than patients at public hospitals like yours. Of course, we're seeing Angelenos who are living in poorer neighborhoods are more likely to get sick and die from the virus. We've seen that heartbreakingly throughout this. Are you at a disadvantage there at LAC, USC, when it comes to treating COVID patients compared to, hey, a wealthier hospital, Cedars-Sinai or something like that?
No, I find that concept repugnant. I have not seen that article, and I would not believe the article. We have what we need to take care of our patients. What we need is for the public to work with public health to try to slow the spread so we don't get overwhelmed as a system. But I can assure you that the care that we provide is on par or better, in my opinion, than the care that's provided in private hospitals.
Do you see what's happening across the country as a bigger wake-up call for America's healthcare system?
Well, of course, I've just written a book about America's healthcare system, which is clearly dysfunctional and needs to be completely reformed. So, yeah, I think what COVID has done is it's stripped away the veneer of the broken U.S. healthcare system. We have one of the most poorly performing healthcare systems in the world when you compare at the national level our mortality rates to the amount of money that we spend.
Do you think L.A. got rid of the USS Mercy too fast? The big ship that came into the port of L.A. to help assist hospitals? You know, it pretty much sat empty for weeks and weeks, and then finally they were like, all right, the DOD said, let's send it back to where it came from, and it left.
Yeah, I to be honest with you, I'm not sure that we found the expanded hospital beds that useful at the time. And I think that people need to recognize that no one really knows where things are going moment to moment or week to week. This virus is still very new, and we should have some humility when we look forward. What I say is Sun Tzu said that no battle plan survives first contact from the enemy. And Mike Tyson distilled that down to everyone has a plan till you get punched in the mouth. Well, we're getting punched in the mouth by COVID. And all we can do at the hospital level is respond managerially the best we can and improve our efficiency the best we can. The people who have the power to bend this curve are your listeners. We need the public to physically distance, to wear the masks, to wash their hands. Because if we slow the spread, the healthcare system will be able to handle the patient volumes that come to us.
It's funny you quote Mike Tyson. It's trying to make a comeback in the boxing world, so so here we are trying to fight this coronavirus, and I know you guys have your hands full over there. Dr. Brad Spellberg, Chief Medical Officer over at LA County USC Medical Center, also authored the book Broken, Bankrupt, and Dying, How to Solve the Great American Healthcare Ripoff. Dr. Spellberg, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
Moving on with Greater LA Now, I'm KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Let's squeeze a little time now for the County of Orange. Actually, let's go to Huntington Beach specifically. The Surf City has become a bit of a hotspot for coronavirus deniers and mask haters. You may have seen this video floating around the internet of a couple of party bros, Chad and JT, trying to hand out free masks at the boardwalk.
Sir, do you need a mask?
No, I'm good. Thanks for asking.
Cool. Hey, do you guys need a mask?
No, we don't. Why?
You don't?
Because there's this thing called coronavirus.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's a lie.
Really? Are you pro mask, bro?
Do you want a mask?
It's all fake, dude. Come on.
I'm good, man.
No, man, that's a fraud.
I like freedom, dog.
I like fresh air.
Now, long story short, it didn't go particularly well. Gustavo Arellano writes for the LA Times. He's here with KCRW's Orange County line. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
We should say that video was shot by the beach in the fresh air, where people can be physically distant between each other, right? Are you seeing this type of resistance to masks, say, inside a grocery store or inside other places and denser areas as well?
Well, you see anecdotal evidence online of people at grocery stores not wearing masks. I've actually had a friend of mine who lives in Huntington Beach. She was talking about how a guy was openly mocking her at a liquor store for wearing a mask, to the point where she asked the head of the liquor store to kick out the guy because he was just being so belligerent. But it's Huntington Beach being Huntington Beach. Huntington Beach proudly stands athwart the modern day Orange County and says, stop. This is not this new, diverse, liberal Orange County. We are not a part of it. We are Huntington Beach, and we're going to live by the morals of John Wayne and Ronald Reagan and that old Orange County. So if Governor Newsom says wear a mask, we're going to say hell no.
Well, what if it were a Governor Dukmejian or a Governor Reagan, you know, a Republican saying these things? Would Huntington Beach be any different?
We're seeing it right now. You have President Donald Trump now, after what, months later, wearing a mask in public, saying wearing masks are patriotic, obviously being against mandates to do so, but you're not seeing it. I mean, we can't do a census of people who wear masks, but that's not changing ideas, because you also have to remember Huntington Beach is a surf town. Surf towns are always going to be a little bit sort of libertarian. Hey, man, if I don't have to do it, if I don't want to do it, and you should respect my right to not do it. So it's already inclined to do so, to not wear masks. Now, you put that under a Democratic administration in California, in a county that has been changing demographically and politically over the past 20-some years. And yeah, Huntington Beach is going to be proudly anti-mask and be proudly against anyone who criticizes Huntington Beach for having that position.
When it comes to COVID cases in Orange County, how does Huntington Beach compare to neighboring cities?
Well, Huntington Beach has the fourth highest case total in Orange County, which it's not really surprising because it is one of the bigger cities in Orange County. It also has the third highest death rate. Percentage-wise, it's not as bad as other cities, but still, it is a thing in Huntington Beach, like it is in any place in the United States, whether you're red or blue. But you, for people who do not want to wear masks, you cannot argue with facts. You just can't. It's all about their worldview and whatever they saw on Twitter or Facebook or some other radio show.
It's one thing to decline a mask that someone's giving you near the beach, right? But it's another thing in what the city says. So what is the city of Huntington Beach saying when it comes to not only masks, but getting this under control?
The city's actually not as virulently anti-mask as some of its residents, or even the County of Orange, the Board of Supervisors for that matter. And they haven't mandated anything. They're not like Costa Mesa, which has been, over the past couple of weeks, has been threatening to issue $100 fines to anyone who's not wearing a mask in public. They haven't gone through on that. But at the same time, the city is not, even though Huntington Beach does have a lot of coronavirus cases, they're not telling people, hey, you got to wear a mask because coronavirus is serious. Even though over 30 of its city employees have tested positive for coronavirus, including a dozen people at the Huntington Beach Police Department. So it is affecting Huntington Beach as a civic entity, but not to the point, at least in the minds of politicians, where they say, we should really tell our residents, hey, you know, being so proudly anti-mask, it's not a good look on us, bro.
Hundreds of people gathered on the sand at the beach in Huntington Beach last Friday for the fourth week in a row to participate. This is a Christian revival meeting called Saturate OC. That's despite a city order, the city telling them to cancel the event. Is that event still going on and other events like it?
Yeah, because you have the added wrinkle of these are evangelical Christians who they have been most loudly of all communities of faith. They have been very adamant in pushing the state of California to reopen church services. I mean, they're quoting biblical scripture saying that the Bible mandates that you're supposed to worship in a big group. Never mind that Jesus in Matthew 18:20 flat out said, and I quote, "Where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there among them." So even though Jesus himself says, hey, you don't have to all gather in mass to worship in my name to be Christians, evangelicals are still going to do it, and especially doubly so Huntington Beach evangelicals.
Gustavo Arellano, who writes for the LA Times, now bringing the New Testament into today's KCRW Orange County line. Gustavo, thank you.
Gracias and God bless.
That's going to do it for us today. I'm Steve Chiatakis. God bless you, and thank you for your ears and time. Have yourself a great day.